Are we going to have a lockout?
I thought I was here to talk about how the Red Blacks are going to pull off the upset.
No, we've already had a CFL segment in the show. We can't do anymore.
I have to actually answer the baseball question. And as we sit here today...
We can, because we've got Arash Madani coming on. All right, so tell me how the Red Blacks are going to pull an upset.
I honestly, Jeff, I just saw that, I'll be honest, I have not watched much of the Red Blacks this year. I just saw that they were an underdog, and I'm feeling an upset. I'm feeling an upset at BMO there in the Grey Cup.
Well, you know what they say, you can never overlook Henry Burris because he's played for every team that he's playing against. That's not true. That's totally unfair.
That is indeed what they always say, Jeff.
Totally unfair. Although in this case, I think he is. But go ahead.
All right. So my answer to your question regarding the labor situation. Okay, here we go. Now we are less than a week away from the December 1st expiration of the current CBA. So really, Jeff, it's a crucial week for the industry, clearly. My expectation, again, based on talking, and I heard a couple players' comments here in the last couple days as well, I still believe they'll find a way to get a deal done. But it's not a certainty here. I think the chances are probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 or 70% that they have a deal by December 1st. Mm-hmm. But again, that's still at least a reasonable chance that that it goes their direction. And if that happens, Jeff, then the thing in the back of my mind is, what's then the next deadline that makes everyone really stand up and take notice and change the situation? And that to me, because it's the way the baseball calendar works, you might be talking about into the new year, which obviously is a very concerning situation for the sport, especially coming off a phenomenal World Series, a lot of momentum right now, football's ratings down, the NFL's at least down here in the States, and maybe some positive conversation now around baseball. Yes, there are some legitimate issues out there, the international draft, free agent draft pick compensation, drug testing, a number of different things in that milieu. But Jeff, it's my belief that there is not one single event or issue large enough to risk what's been two decades plus of labor peace at a time when really the game is on a very good trend line, and they do not want to disrupt what's happening right now.
Speaking of disrupting, what are the Atlanta Braves doing? I mean, we were all under the impression that they were just sort of going to exist this year. And, you know, it looks as if they may actually have a bit of a plan. Now, I'm not saying that signing Sean Rodriguez puts you in a position where, you know, you can necessarily contend for the postseason. But the thing that I am noticing about the Braves is that they certainly want to be competitive. And, you know, they've acquired guys that, quite frankly, you might be able to turn into something at the trade deadline.
Very true, Jeff. And you look at the Braves right now, I have a couple thoughts on them. Number one, you never get a second chance to open a new stadium. Mm-hmm. We saw the Marlins back in 2012. For a variety of reasons, things did not go well for them as they tried to do so in Miami. And really, you look at the team's attendance figures, they've never totally caught up with that. And the Braves, we know, of course, even going back to when they were in their heyday in the 90s, Jeff, they would still sometimes struggle to draw. So it is a fickle fan base based on history. And when you look at the big picture here and some of the questions that were out there about why the Braves are putting the ballpark in that part of town with all the traffic situations there in the northern part of Atlanta, I really think, Jeff, they want to do their best to put a competitive team on the field, one that at least their fans can get a little excited about. Now, do we think they're going to compete with the Nationals and the Mets in 2017? Candidly, Jeff, they would have to make a lot more moves than they've already made for me to believe that. But you can see them starting to get better. And to your point, Jeff, look at what the Cubs did when they signed the likes of Feldman and Mahalem, some various 1- and 2-year type pitchers. Early in Theo Epstein's tenure there, he was able to flip them for value. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jake Arrieta was part of that value in the Feldman deal. I think that's some of the same mentality here with the likes of Colon and Dickey and even Rodriguez to an extent. So I think the thinking is sound, Jeff, and the competitiveness I expect to be better, even though I do believe they're probably 1 or 2 major pieces away from really being a contender. But all that being said, they could actually, if they wanted to, they still have the prospect depth, Jeff, and I've heard this before, they're still out there looking at the likes of a Chris Sale or a Quintana or an Archer to really improve that rotation. If they do that, then you might be able to think, okay, they've got a chance to at least have a winning record in 2017.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the name that really intrigues me for them, and that is Chris Archer, because I'm looking at Chris Archer as a guy, if you're the Atlanta Braves, that you know, you get the immediate payoff, but you're also looking a couple of years down the road. You could have your ace. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm a huge Chris Archer fan, despite what, you know, despite how the season turned out for him. That's a name that really intrigues me with that team. And you know, I know people are linking them with Chris Sale, and that makes sense. But man, I look at their prospect depth and what the Devil Rays may be looking, or the Rays. God, I can't believe we call them the Devil Rays. What the Rays
okay,
may...
Jeff. We all do it sometimes.
Yeah, every now and then. What the Rays may be looking for Chris Archer, and there's a perfect match. There's an absolutely perfect match.
There is, Jeff, on a number of levels there. And actually, it was at the GM meetings when I was told and reported there had been at least some preliminary talks between the Braves and the Rays about Chris Archer. And of course, you allude to the fact that he had the 19 loss season, I believe, here this past year. But he was much better after the All-Star break. I think it was just a rough start, maybe it was the expectations. He just did not have a good first half, and he was himself for the most part in the second half. He's going to be a key member of Team USA at the World Baseball Classic. We know that as well. And also, Jeff, for a team that's trying to establish a foothold and find some marketing stars that they can really wrap their arms around, in addition to Freddie Freeman, of course, whose parents are Canadian, when you look at Chris Archer, he's from North Carolina, so he's from the South, nearby Atlanta, a very charismatic guy, great personality. So he's someone that I think, Jeff, the Braves would do well to get, because I do believe he would offer them value beyond whatever he does when he's on the mound.
Yeah, he's absolutely one of the big personalities in the game, and he's, you know, we know from the work he does in this community when the Rays are in town, he's given time and money in this community, which he doesn't.
He really gets it.
He's a very good citizen in addition to a good pitcher. All right, let's bring it a little closer to home with the Blue Jays. Boy, you really laid it out for ownership and management the other day. You know, essentially, you know, you spend some money to make this team better. You know, I'm wondering, given the current situation with the CBA, are the Blue Jays one of the teams that you think are maybe just keeping their powder dry until they absolutely know with 100% certainty which direction this thing is going? You know, we've talked about the Red Sox and David Dombrowski being very open, and he's kind of waiting for a little more guidance here. And I wonder if the Blue Jays are the same way.
Potentially, Jeff. I do think that no matter what they do, they'll be comfortably below the $189 million threshold for the luxury tax this past year, which I have a hard time thinking in any circumstance that number would go down. So I don't see the Jays as being a ball club that's going to challenge that number. So from their purposes, actually, they can be somewhat aggressive because they both have resources, and they're not, at least from what I can tell in my calculations, they're not really at danger of tripping over that $189 million threshold there anytime soon, at least. So, again, I think the argument that I make along the lines of why free agency makes sense, whether it's a Dexter Fowler or even potentially on the bullpen side as well, is if the idea is to protect the prospects that you have, which is what Mark Shapiro and Ross Zacheth talked about a lot since they took over a little more than a year ago, is that if they want to protect the prospects, then fine, and then that's why you have one of the great, you know, the largest single season attendance increase that we had in baseball between 2015 and 2016. You've got the revenues now to do it. So I think you're in a really good situation to go out there on the open market and then use that financial wherewithal that you've accumulated over the last year, and then keep your prospects in the minor leagues as you'd like. I mean, you could certainly Green and Reed Foley, there are some names down there that prospects that teams certainly would ask about, but if the idea is that eventually that you need those guys at the major league level, then I do think free agency right now, Jeff, is the more sensible play for them, which would mean potentially a Dexter Fowler or again, the relievers that I mentioned, the likes of Boone Logan or a Jerry Blevins, perhaps.
Where do you see Dexter Fowler's market going?
Jeff, to me, Dexter Fowler is a 4 or 5 year contract player. I think at probably $15 million a year or thereabouts. I look at it and say, if he signed a deal tomorrow for 4 years and $60 million or 5 years and 65, I would say that's about what I expect it's going to be, somewhere in that range. He is a phenomenal leadoff hitter. We saw what he did in the World Series. We saw what he did in Game 7. So clearly a sense for the big moments there. Great guy in the clubhouse. I think his defense, there was a bit of a blip here in the last couple of years, but I think he really stabilized and got better in 2016. And again, he just gives the Blue Jays some balance. He gives them some left balance, which they need badly. Of course, he's a switch hitter. So I think for so many different reasons, Jeff, he fits this team very well. If it's not him, I think Adam Eaton via trade is a possibility if the Jays do decide that they're willing to go that route. And I think the big question is, and I know it's been talked about before, if Biagini is going to be in the rotation, or at least looked upon that way, then you do wonder about Stroman and if they would consider putting him out there. Again, I'm a big believer in Marcus's future. I think that he would be phenomenal to stay in Toronto, and I think the Jays probably want him to ideally stay in Toronto. But I do sense, Jeff, that there is that slight possibility that if they are flummoxed in their efforts via free agency, and they want to make a trade, and let's say they want to hold on to their younger guys, or perhaps other teams aren't as keen on those minor league guys, that the young, controllable major league starter like Stroman, I think his name is going to surface in some of these trade talks.
Yeah, and I know both Stephen Brunt and myself have said that a couple of times, that I don't think you can rule it out. There's a big difference between saying, hey, we're trying to trade a guy, and right, not ruling it out. And I think that's kind of the point they're at now. The return would have to be great, but you look at this team and you go, okay, where is the position of depth? Well, that's kind of the position of depth. And then you say, all right, in that position of depth, who do you realistically, if you had to prioritize guys you want to keep, guys you want to move, guys you'd get the most for, Stroman would tick off all those boxes.
Oh, he would. And I think you look at the way that, again, Jeff, the fact that we're seeing this starting pitching market for trades develop somewhat quickly this year, at least in terms of the conversations. We haven't seen a lot of action yet, but there has been heavy dialogue. I was told that by a number of different executives here in the last couple of weeks. And it's because the free agent market for pitching is not very good, starting pitching at least. And then you look at the class of potential guys available among the starters in trade, and that's why there are so many big names there, whether it's Sale and Quintana and Archer, Odorizzi, Smiley in Tampa Bay, DeSclafani in Cincinnati, Sonny Gray in Oakland, and then Stroman's in that class. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a very active market, Jeff, right now for starting pitchers who have multiple years of control in general. And just in that environment, I think it's the responsible thing and the logical thing, if you're Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, to just see what kind of value Stroman has and then adjust accordingly based on your needs. Because I think we would all agree, Jeff, you look at the outfield right now for the Jays, and this is really an interesting test for them, because this is really, last offseason, it wasn't a huge winter from the standpoint of really chasing after free agents to fill desperate needs. Of course, they did bring in Happ from the outside. Estrada was retained, and they let David Price go. I think now that this winter time is an interesting test, because you and I have talked about this before, really for years. Now the Jays have made back-to-back ALCSs. They're firmly on the map as a World Series contender. How do they do now in terms of recruiting basically American-born free agents? It's always the big question, and how they compete. If all things are equal, do they have to overpay in some cases just for the comfort factor of going to a different country for some guys? So I think this is a really interesting test for them to see how they do. Do they have to overpay, or is the fact that they're winning now, which is certainly the way it was in the 90s, where Toronto was the place to be and can be again, is the winning enough to really lure those guys over? And I think this offseason is going to be a very good test of that.
I'm intrigued by the New York Yankees this offseason. I think we all assumed the Yankees were, they were happy with their young players. We all saw what they did last year at the trade deadline, the run that they had at the end of the season, or that petered out at the end of the season. But all winter long, we've heard that they may be, kicking tires even on Edwin and Jose. Aroldis Chapman to the Yankees. John, I've always thought Aroldis Chapman was going to re-sign with the Yankees the second he was traded to Chicago. It just seemed to feel like that was the case. But our pal Ken Rosenthal is reporting that the Yankees have been really aggressive. They were one of the finalists for Brett Cecil, who signed with the St. Louis Cardinals. What are the Yankees attempting to do this offseason? Do you think that maybe Brian Cashman has taken a step back and thought, you know what, there really is some value out there? You know, as good as we are in terms of young players and as happy as we have to be with where we are in the stage of our development, we could do worse things than maybe sign a closer or bring in another reliever on a four-year contract and have that guy be with us just as our window of opportunity is opening.
Jeff, I think one of the most intriguing teams to watch, and I think you touched on many of the reasons why. Now that they've made these trades with the Cubs, notably, and the Indians to bring in some of that young talent, they are now, I'm not saying they're all the way back to where they were in the early 90s when they had Jeter and Pettit and Posada in the pipeline, and Bernie Williams, of course, was coming into his own as well. But this is now the almost Cubs-like model of, when you are a high payroll team and you're able to sort of right-size your payroll a little bit, which is what the Yankees have done by trading McCann, and of course this is the last year of A-Rod and CC on the books, and Teixeira's money's already gone. So you look at the big picture here, and they now have the combination of some young talent already in the big leagues like a Gary Sanchez, then some young talent that's coming, like Gleyber Torres in that group, and the guys they got in the different trades, and now they can look at it and say, you know what, we're going to have some low cost position players that are going to help us keep a moderate, you know, modest payroll in that regard for years to come. Now we can get back to being the Yankees in free agency, mm-hmm. which is exactly what I think is happening right now. They know that A-Rod's money's coming off the books, and CeCe's, that's like $60 million or so after this year. So they can actually sign a guy now, whether it's Cespedes, Encarnacion, and then backload that first year of the deal, and then all of a sudden they're really off and going come 2018. So I think Kenny's report is spot on, as Kenny's reports always are, and they're on all these big names. They're on all the medium names. The one thing I think, Jeff, is you look at their starting rotation, they need at least one more guy, and whether it's Rich Hill or whether it's in a trade, and then they can maybe put some of their depth to use and get a pitcher. You know, they're in a really good spot because they've got multiple young shortstops. In addition to Torres, they've got players by the name of Mateo and Wade, who are very good prospects as well at the middle infield positions. So now they have this tradable depth they can go out there and use. They're just in a really good position, Jeff. And so I think maybe trade for a starting pitcher and then sign a bat or two, whether it's Cespedes or Encarnacion. They can really make some noise at first base, whether it's, you know, Mike Napoli could be in the mix there, Trumbo, Bautista, you name it. These are all guys that would want to go play there probably and hit in that ballpark in a lineup that I think is going to get better and better in the next coming years. So I think Brian Cashman did a very good thing at the deadline this year, and now the Yankees are in a very strong position here in the offseason as a result.
John, we're going to let you scoot. Appreciate you doing this. Have a great Thanksgiving weekend.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. The Lions stunningly triumphant there yesterday.
It.
They're now in first place all alone. And then, of course, the big one tomorrow. This is the big Morosi v. McCowan, Michigan-Ohio State. We'll see how everything turns out.
I thought you were talking about Laval and Calgary, the ArcelorMittal DeFasco Vanier Cup, which is being played in Hamilton, which we will have in Sportsnet Ontario. That's
I
the
love
only.
It. So now who should I root for in the Vanier Cup? I need a team.
I mean, you're talking to the wrong person. I went to the University of Manitoba, so I genetically cannot cheer for Calgary. And Laval Rougeor they're like, if you combined Ohio State, Michigan, Florida State, Florida, Notre Dame together, that would kind of be. Oh, their coach is joining us this morning, so I'm a big Laval Rougeor fan.
I'm going with Laval as well.
Allez Laval. Merci beaucoup.
Bonjour, Monsieur Blair.
Toi aussi. Take care.